The dust has settled on NHL free agency for the first couple days. I'm here in the Yahoo headquarters in New York City, where evidently July 3rd is in fact a holiday. I'm like the only one here, Merrick. I could literally run up and down the halls, buck-ass naked, and no one would even see it.
I was going to say, how tempted are you right now just to remove your pants and just say, I'm just doing this to my boxers, that's it.
Yeah, and then if they get caught, I'm like, I'm just a blogger. I don't know about pants. Like,
dude,
be
man,
the perfect...
it's in my contract. First of all, you should be lucky I'm not in the basement. Pants, it's a whole other contract, all right, buddy?
But seriously, like, I don't know about you, but, like, I love days like this. Because, like, you go into the office and no one's here. You go on the subway, no one's on the subway. I walked around a little bit near Times Square where our office is. I mean, there's some tourists and stuff, but it's not, like, the commute. It's like... it's like the city just says, all right, I'm just going to exhale for a day. You guys are all right. You guys do your thing.
Does it always, and I'm going to go to this weekend to CBC to pick up my podcast equipment, and in the hockey department, you could probably fire a cannon from one end to the other. And it's going to feel like a combination of Omega Man and 28 Days Later.
To update it, like, it totally felt like I Am Legend a little bit. Like, I was walking around New York City and I'm waiting for the vampiric infected to come out and maraud me. But anyway, we didn't have a show yesterday.
How was your free agent? First of all, Sam, there's an echo in my ear. Second of all, how was your war room free agent day? I love the graphics that you and Leahy were able to put together. That was pretty top drawer.
Yeah, that was me freehanding some block lettering. If you remember, everybody, last year at this time, Leahy and I attempted to do a free agent war room here at Yahoo, but I didn't quite know how to book a conference room correctly. Awesome. So what happened was we got into it for about 3 hours, and then a mustached gentleman with a fancy mustache you'd see at a speakeasy.
Could you twirl it like Long Finger style?
It was a Twister mustache. It was a very fancy mustache. He came over it, and if you recall the conversation, he said, "I'm sorry, but we have a meeting in this room." And then I'm like, "You have a meeting?" He's like, "Yes, we have a meeting scheduled here every week." I'm like, "Well, listen, it's a very important day. It's National Hockey League Free Agency Day. We are here. We're working on it. This is kind of a newsroom. Is there anywhere else in the building that you guys could like sit and talk?" No, this is our room every week at this time, so we can't go anywhere.
Nothing quite sounds drippingly pretentious quite as someone trailing up at the end of every sentence as they confront you with an issue. If you really want to infuriate someone, when you're speaking to them, at the end of every sentence, trail up. Make sure you do that. Make sure you always end things on an uptick like that, as if you have some type of moral superiority over them.
And that exactly was what was being done to me. As Leahy reminded me yesterday or 2 days ago at Corey Massasik's going away party, and fare thee well, Corey, NHL.com's own, moving to Charlotte and fare thee well. He reminded me that I said to this gentleman, this mustached gentleman, I believe the line was, "Listen, we're creating effing content and you're talking. You could talk at a coffee shop. We're creating effing content."
You know what the great line is too? Why do anything about it when you can have a meeting instead? We're doing something here. We have your meeting at frickin' Starbucks.
No, but we had a good time, man. Like, he and I banged out I was really happy with the coverage we had on Puck Daddy. Like, we had a story basically on every major signing. We covered the hell out of the Kessel thing, and then he and I did a little video action later on. So it worked out real nice. It was a solid day of work. But I mean, like, can you give me a sense of what it was like on the ground in TDOT when the Kessel trade came down?
Explosion. It's funny because we were waiting for that at the draft. I think I mentioned on the last podcast we did together, there was that talk on the floor between Pittsburgh, and Toronto, and it was Kessel, and the names going around were, Pouliot, Kasperi Kapanen, who ended up going in the deal. There were contracts going back. Kunitz and Scuderi's name was out. You'll talk to Rob Rossi about this a little bit later on. He had the same info that we had. So we were all sort of waiting for that pin to be pulled out of the grenade, at which point I'm sure the draft just would have stopped as the hockey world just would have exploded if they would have pulled off the Phil Kessel deal. But no, it turned into the easiest day of sports talk radio, I can tell you that. Like, it's one of those moments where if you're doing sports talk, you pray for. It's one of those days where if you're hungover going into your job, you hope that it happens, because it's as simple as, well, Kessel's a Penguin, let's go to the phones. It's that freaking, you have to put exactly zero thought into your show.
Right.
When the Phil Kessel deal drops. But listen, man, the ripple effects are still being felt. Right now, All the character assassination pieces are getting written. All the sideways jokes at Phil Kessel get written with parts of that are coming in. And this has now become fuel, I would like to say, for Toronto Sports Radio right up until training camp next year. You know, what are the ramifications of the Phil Kessel trade? Who are the new kids coming in? And what does this mean for the team?
Now,
and what is his place in the pantheon of this generation's Toronto Maple Leaf squad?
Right. In fairness to Steve Simmons, I know that if I lived at the Weston Harbor Castle on Queens Quay, that I could conceivably walk downstairs and get a hot dog or a sausage every day. I know that there has been some disputing of his reporting as to whether or not there actually is a hot dog vendor stationed outside of Phil Kessel's house, wherein he could have had a hot dog every day.
And
I know
that
the pension plan puppet boys are working on this right now. They're trying to crack this story that Simmons may have actually embellished his lead.
What's the hot dog guy?
Yeah, the hot dog guy.
Hot dog guys are everywhere. You've been to Toronto-ish. You know that area.
But my single favorite thing about this entire Kessel trade was this. At the same time it was reported that this trade had gone down and everybody knew it was coming back Toronto's way, you know what else was reported? It was reported that Phil Kessel is going to work out with Gary Roberts this summer.
And that was all the week before. That was the week before.
But
week
dude, before. How brilliant is that? Like, all of this talk about him being unmotivated and a big fat turd, and he's just a turd who doesn't want to play, and he kills his coaches, and he just wants to turd all over the locker room, and he's going to work out with the Taskmaster. Not only the guy who will have you dragging heavy things behind you like you're in a Rocky montage, but a guy who literally will figure out how you don't eat hot dogs every day and get your ass in shape. That is the ultimate F you to Toronto. It is, you accuse me of eating my way out of this locker room, and now I'm going to go on The Biggest Loser.
Okay, but here's the tip-off, because that news dropped about a week before the trade. Now, you know that Gary Roberts has a new facility in Pittsburgh. Like, that was the beginning of the, hey, let's connect the dots here for a lot of people with Phil Kessel and the Pittsburgh Penguins. Damien had the piece on how they're talking. There were a number of reports, you know, trying to, you know, fiery arrows into that report. 100% true. Even Rutherford said, we've been working on this deal for about a month now. One of the worst kept secrets. In the NHL, these two teams were working on a deal, but that news dropped about a week before the trade itself, which was one of those, okay, there's even more, you know, fire to this smoke. Now Phil Kessel's talking about training with Gary Roberts. Oh, I don't think he's going to be training in Richmond Hill. I think he'll be training at the Pittsburgh facility. Thank you very much.
Yeah. What did you think of the trade?
Never going to get value. And the Maple Leafs, you know, didn't get full value for the 35 to 40 goals that Phil Kessel represents every year. Now, some may say, oh, those are empty calorie goals with Toronto. If they're not going to be a good team for 5 years, there's no point in having Phil Kessel on the roster. You know, try to get as much out of the deal as you can. Try not to retain any salary. Try not to take back any contract. They ended up taking 1.2. Kasperi Kapanen, you know, at one point was a top 10 prospect last year. Stock dropped horribly. Did a really bad second half last season. Scott Harrington is a former captain of the London Knights. Anyone in management from the Maple Leafs with the London Knights organization?
There's one guy I think he's sort of familiar with him.
It's Team London Knight now. Brendan Shanahan's an old London Knight, for crying out loud. Harrington is a 6'2" stay-at-home defenseman who was captain of the London Knights, really good, you know, wingspan, defensive, pretty tough. They played him with Jared Tenorti in London. He's a safe, steady guy. The first-round pick is the first-round pick. It just gives you another option either to take a first-round or a trade, depending on where the Penguins end up. But is that full value for a 35- to 40-goal scorer? No.
Well, no.
It's not.
Not at all.
It's not. So who wins the trade? Depends how you spin it. The Maple Leafs looking to start anew. I guess they got that big ticket, non-Mike Babcock-esque style player out of the room. I mean, I told you this story before. One of the coaches a few years back that I talked to on the Maple Leafs and said, who's the one guy you wish wasn't on the team? And he said, it's Phil Kessel. I'm scratching my head. And I said, why Phil Kessel? Guy's like 35 goals in the bank. He said, I can't tell you how many players have come up to me and said, I wish I could be just like Phil, you know, go to McDonald's every day and Phil snap in 35 goals, not have to worry about working out. He just said that ripple effect through the room, you know, you may scoff at it, but it's true. Like, how many guys look at that and go, wow, man, what am I doing in the gym?
You know what's funny, though, is that, like, that's exactly what Jim Rutherford said. I mean, Jim Rutherford basically said, look, he never gets hurt. He has amazing stats. Other guys are putting in extraordinary hours at the gym. Maybe he's on to something here.
Well, remember we did that show a couple of years ago, and I think we were talking about, I mean, some of the guys that have showed up out of shape, like Jeremy Roenick after the lockout. I think in his own words, he said sort of defiantly, that was his protest about the lockout, joining up out of shape. Keith Tkachuk was another one. Sergei Samsonov came into Boston, I think like 25 pounds over. That might have been more due to migraines than just being lazy during the lockout. But remember the show that we did about, you know, do you have to be in shape to play sports? Like, there seems to be this great myth that, you know, great, you know, physical fitness leads to great athletic achievement, and it will give you a better chance. Certainly, there's no guarantee. It doesn't allow you to maximize your potential, but I mean, how much more can you ask of a guy than 40 goals a year, 35 goals a year? Now, you may look at you and say, well, you know what, though, that's great, but if you can light matches off the guy, he's a guaranteed 50. Might be true, and it might not. We don't know.
Yeah. That's the contention, but I think the pressure for him to get in shape is going to be pretty strong in Pittsburgh. Now, the question, I'll talk to Rossi more about,
Jen Neal, I think, nailed it. With the presence of Sidney Crosby in that room, because he sets a work ethic for everyone on that team, I think that the pressure, a little bit more than was in Toronto, a little more in shape and also, ethic is a little stronger.
And while I don't believe that carrots are Phil Kessel's favorite food, there's a hell of a carrot in front of him now, which is I can score 50 and I can win a cup, which is a different kind of carrot that was ever in front of him in Toronto. So let's be honest.
Yeah, true. Right, I just don't know if the Penguins have the depth to do. I mean, it's a better conversation for Rossi. He's closer to it than I am, but I just don't know if the Penguins still have enough depth to get there.
Couple more things, couple more moves. We haven't had a show in a bit. What was your thought? Let's start at the beginning. Your thoughts on 3 years, $3 million a year for Martin Jones from the Sharks?
Oh boy, another backup goaltender from Los Angeles cashes in. Hello, Jonathan Bernier. Hello, Martin Jones. It's funny because when the trade was made to the Boston Bruins, pretty much everybody at the draft said, hold on, don't buy your Jones jersey yet. I personally think the number is decent when you look at the goaltending market out there and who they're going to get. I mean, this was the year of the backup goaltender. This was the draft day of the backup goaltender. And this was the free agent day of the backup goaltender. When have you ever seen, I mean, geez, Robin Leonard goes for a first-round pick. Now, you can say he's more than a backup goaltender, but still, at the end of it, he's a freaking backup goaltender.
Yeah.
This was the sort of, to me, this was the zenith. This was the Mount Everett of what happened with backup goaltenders this year, with Martin Jones getting the $3 million from the San Jose Sharks. Clearly, they wanted the guy for a long time. Zero chance L.A. was going to deal him there.
Right. Michael Frolik gets 5 years, $4.3 million a year from Winnipeg.
Calgary.
I was thinking about where he left. I got a DM from somebody before asking me whether or not the additions of Dougie Hamilton and Michael Frolik dramatically increase the expectations on Calgary to the point where they might be the second best team in that division.
Wow, with that blue line, you can make a case. And now Michael Frolik, one of the best two-way players in the NHL, shows up. It's funny, too, because we were waiting. This was going to be the great year for everyone, the analytics community, to have a look at the Calgary Flames and say, you're just Minnesota. You're just Toronto. You're just Colorado. You're that
Colorado
next in line to have that big fall, right? I'm curious now to see what happens with these two new additions. And you look at Calgary defense, and it's amongst the elite in the NHL now.
Yeah.
And the addition of Michael Frolik, who, remember, once upon a time, wish we were just saying, big deal, the guy kills penalties and that's it. You know, kill the penalty, go to the bench, a lot more to Michael Frolik than just that.
Yeah, and I think the difference is, one, the blue line for this team, like you mentioned, puts them in a better position to repeat the conditions of last season than any of the other teams that you mentioned, the one-hit wonders. And coaching, too. I mean, listen, man, Colorado had a bad defense and Patrick Waugh. And Calgary has a great defense and Bob Hartley. So you tell me which team's got a better chance of repeating the conditions from the previous season.
I'll tell you what. You know what? There was speaking of Patrick Waugh in Colorado, they make the Ryan O'Reilly deal. They bring in Nikita Zadorov, Mikhail Grigorenko. Of course, Waugh had Grigorenko with the Ramparts when he owned the coach and general managed. Nikita Zadorov is an interesting player. At times interested, at times not. Certainly was in the last big tournament he was in. That was the Memorial Cup. He wasn't the only 95 that seemed completely uninterested in the affair, but nonetheless, he's going to have his hands full because one of the ways that Patrick Waugh handled Mikhail Grigorenko in Quebec was he was very coddled and he got the ice time that he needed. He got the cookies that he needed. You know, he shows up in Colorado as Patrick Waugh's pet project. And if he gets all that loving and, you know, foot massages and back scratches, you know, you can see Grigorenko having a big year, a comeback year. But can you also see Colorado losing at the same time? And a lot of guys that have been there for a lot of years saying, like, what the F is up with this?
Colorado could easily become the new Edmonton as far as players marinating and losing for a couple of years. And it's not
going to
be pretty.
Could be. The Grigorenko move to me is a fascinating one. So is the Zadorov one. I'm pretty sure, you know, the Zadorov move was the reason why Colorado didn't try to move up to grab either Zach Werenski or Ivan Provorov.
Yeah. Washington's moves, the TJ Oshie trade and Justin Williams.
I mean, Williams is money in the playoffs, right? That's no secret. So you can sell it that way. TJ Oshie has been, you know, the hot and cold faucet now for a long time. Big body guy, you're just waiting to break out, maybe playing with some of those elite level guys. But interestingly enough, now he goes to from a Ken Hitchcock coach team to a Barry Trotz coach team. And even though, you know, they're still offensive, you know, juggernauts in Washington, it's still Barry Trotz. At the end of the day, I was a big Troy Brouwer fan. I still am. Loved him down the stretch. Loved him in the playoffs. It's a risky move for the Washington Capitals. I know it's the one area they need to shore up. Their defense is fine. Thank you very much. Hey, look, that goaltending's pretty good last time I checked as well. But that one to me seems a little bit risky. What do you think?
I don't see it as risky in the sense that I think the stuff that they gave up is stuff that they didn't need. I mean, they don't need the goalie prospect. They're loaded in goal, and they just drafted one in the first round, too.
That's right.
Brouwer, to me, is on that team is between a second and third liner for the Caps, and you give up the pick as well. So from that perspective, I don't think it's a trade they'll ever regret. But that said, you know, what is Oshie going to end?
Isn't TJ Oshie always a guy? Because, God, he's so damn skilled. Like, don't you always come away from Blues games saying, man, you just want more out of that guy?
Completely. So you're betting on him playing with more elite offensive talent than what the Blues had, and they never stuck him on a line with Tarasenko, for example. Yeah. You know, you're hoping that he plays with better elite talent and finds his game that way, and you're hoping that it comes together for him now with 2 years left on his deal, and that's what you're hoping. There is a bit of a gamble here. That's for sure, and especially because the one thing we know he's good at ain't going to matter next year because the shootout's going to be diminished because of 3-on-3. Mm-hmm. That said, you left last season with Joel Ward and Troy Brouwer as your right wings, your top right wings, okay?
Yep.
Now you have Justin Williams and TJ Oshie. I would say that's a bit of an upgrade over two guys that I think are basically third liners in this league.
Yeah, and just get into a Game 7. I mean, how many times have you seen Washington go to a Game 7 and it all falls apart?
Right.
And then there you go. And then you have Mr. Game 7, Justin Williams. No, it's an upgrade. It definitely is. I've always wanted more out of TJ Oshie. Mm-hmm. And every year, maybe it's because I've been burned so many times in hockey pools. Every year it's like, okay, this is a year for TJ Oshie. You watch, guys. This is Oshie's big year. And it's just not there.
And I know that we have 100 more things we probably haven't gotten to, but we need to move on in a second. And I want to bring up probably the most fascinating individual of the last 2 weeks. Boston Bruins general manager Don Sweeney. Now, you want to talk about a roller coaster? I mean, Jesus, man. Ooh. Has anyone had higher peaks and lower valleys in a 1 week span than Don Sweeney?
Yeah, and what was his line that he told everyone in the organization when he took over? Be warned, guys, it's going to be a rocky ride. Is it going to be a bumpy ride to start?
Yeah, and it's amazing. Like, you know, you look back at the Hamilton debacle, gets roasted for that. the Lucic trade, people were like, wow, that's actually kind of a nice return for Lucic. And the Martin Jones thing continued that when he traded into the Sharks. Then he trades for Zach Rinaldo, and you're all like, who is this asshole? And then he goes and he signs Bolesky for a great contract, like a really great contract compared to what we all thought he was going to get.
If you're Anaheim, you're like, what the F is this all about?
Well, they did okay. Hey, listen, they did okay. I think Carl Hagelin's a better player than Matt Bolesky, personally. But, like, Don Sweeney and Jim Rutherford are the two guys this week that came into free agency and everything with people being like, do we need a CAT scan here to make sure there's something inside the cranium? And then they leave it with people going, wow, Award for these guys, as we'll call it, the Bill Torrey Award, because it needs a name.
Yeah, and then that's the right choice, by the way, with all due respect to Sam Pollock, because Torrey started from zero. It is fascinating. Although with Sweeney still, I can't help but coming back to Dougie Hamilton, regardless of everything that happened with Lucic and Jake, all that stuff, Jones, like, regardless of that, how you let someone with that skill set at that position, knowing how weak you are at that position in the future, walk, you know, for that ticket. Now, you could say that wasn't entirely his decision, that was made by or sort of encouraged by people around him, maybe even the player himself. I mean, he wouldn't be the first young player who felt that, you know, maybe some of the veteran players aren't exactly cool with some of the kids in the Boston Bruins, let's just say, perhaps to a fault. So there's a lot of, extenuating circumstances when it comes to Dougie Hamilton. But as everyone clamors to lock up their defense in long term and not let them go, unless there is a serious problem. Oh, did we just talk about Buffalo and Zadorov? How do you let that happen? Right? Like, that's the one that I keep coming, regardless of what he does, I keep coming back to Hamilton on Sweeney. What about you?
Well, I mean, the reason that they traded him, as we all found out, is that he's an uppity loner.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And Sagan was too much of a party boy. So was too pouty. What do they all have in common? They're young superstars on a veteran
uppity
lady
loner.
Team. Okay.
I just picture. I love Dougie Hamilton. Dougie Hamilton walking into the Bruins locker room wearing a monocle, and then going into the corner and just working
like
on his poet.
The Monopoly Man.
The Monopoly Man, right. And then he goes to the corner and just starts working on his poetry. That's all. He doesn't talk to anybody. He just works on his poetry the whole time.
Oh,
uppity loner.
Uppity loner. That's crazy. Jamie Salinger character.
Real quick, Ian McDonald wants to know what we thought about the Red Wings. He writes, by the way, the QOD, if you haven't heard, is who did the best in the frenzy. You got to love the Red Wings getting younger with the Brad Richards signing. That's snark.
Oh, boy.
Although adding Mike Green is a good move for the back end. The Mike Green thing is great.
I'm still surprised. I mean, although we've been marrying Mike Green to Detroit now for a few months, not that it was, some found news for us, but just kind of seemed obvious. Are you more than a little bit surprised that he kept his level of pay?
I'm not because a team like Detroit at this point has money to burn a little bit as far as the money they could offer him. So short term, $6 million per season, same salary level. They're a team with a bunch of kids now, so they have cap room to burn a little bit. And I think they just wanted to make sure they secured him. And that, because the thing about Mike Green is this, like, I'm sure there were other offers out there for him to go and play with a team that might be a little bit closer to a cup than Detroit is. So just make sure you get him. And the bottom line for Mike Green is this, like, I don't think he's a $6 million a year player anymore. He certainly shouldn't be that much for a team like the Capitals that are just going to put him on the third pairing. But if you want to throw Mike Green out there with Danny DeKeyser for 82 games, you could do a lot worse than that. You could do a lot worse than that.
Yep, true. To me, the big story still in Detroit is, how does the new coach work with these guys? And there are a lot of guys, a lot of kids from GR that'll do just fine. Thank you very much. But how does Jeff Blashill work with Datsyuk and Zetterberg and the older set on this team? And more so, who are the new kids? You wonder too now, because for so long, the Detroit Red Wings were able to let players marinate in Grand Rapids. Who was your mother for Jim goaltender, Minnesota Tigers, Ken Holland? Thank you. What was Ken Holland's line all the time about players coming in from the American Hockey League? We like our players over-ripened before they joined the Detroit Red Wings. I wonder if that's changed now.
It has to. Based on how many guys have aged off that team and based on how many kids are trying to push for jobs and based on the reality of their surroundings, they don't have a veteran lineup anymore. They've got to push him. But the thing is, you know, I listened to Ken Holland's press conference the other day, and, like, he's naming off these names, like Dylan Larkin and DeKaiser and Nyquist and Yurko and all these guys and Mrazek. And you're just like, all you can think is, like, okay, Babcock left this? For that, like I know he left for the money and the challenge and the chance to get a statue built, but a whole this is not a bare cupboard in Detroit.
Did he mention Andreas Athanasiou? Because I always love hearing hockey people try to pronounce that guy's name.
He may have shied away from it. Finally, and I know we got to get to Rossi. Voinov pleads no contest. He's going to spend 90 days in jail. The NHL still has him suspended, although by the time you hear this, wouldn't it be a July 3rd move for the NHL to make an announcement on Voinov? The NHL still has him suspended. LA still has him suspended. What do you think is going to be the end game for Voinov and the Kings?
I think they'll be allowed to terminate the contract. And I think it's the right move as well. I mean, he's not what?
I was going to ask you, do you think that the other 29 teams collude to keep him out of the league? Or do you think that there's going to be some Dave Poyle moment where someone says he made a mistake and he knows his mistake and he went to counseling and he's a new guy and he happens to play top 2 minutes? So,
yeah, listen, you know me, I'm a real second chance, third chance, fourth chance kind of guy. But this one's a tough one. This one's a real tough one. And I don't think it would be collusion either if, you know, 29 other teams look around and say, as much as Slava Voinov could help us, do we, because let's not forget this is to a business, what does this do to, you know, the image of our organization? And what's this message to our marketplace, which is comprised of many female hockey fans? And not just female hockey fans, just human beings in general. You know, the 90 days is the 90 days. Pleading no contest isn't an admission of guilt either, and I get that. But still, if I ran a team and I had a vote, I would say no. There's no room on the at the end here for you. Sir.
Two things on that. First off, I think that they screwed themselves by doing this end around on Richard's contract by using the morality clause, because there's absolutely no way they can't use it again now. They can't. Like, how do you possibly – and I know that – listen, this is not comparing Richards to Voinov, because honestly, I think there's been a lot of people jumping to conclusions about Richards' situation, not knowing jack and squat about it. And trust me, don't. Okay? There's a lot more to it than simply guy gets stopped at border. But in the case of Voinov, like, if you do that with one guy based on a certain set of circumstances, you sure as hell should do it with the other guy who pled no contest to beating up his wife. The second thing is, I am a cynic, and I believe that much like how the National Hockey League will approach two teams before a game after they had a line brawl and suggest that it's in their best interest not to have another one, I would not be at all surprised if, unlike you, all 29 teams didn't independently come up with the idea to not sign Slava Voinov. It will be unproven. It could be untraceable. But I don't think there's a chance the NHL doesn't communicate to its member teams. Maybe not him. Maybe we let this one kind of fly off to the KHL for a while.
Yeah, I mean, if they got – the problem with that is, even if the NHL remotely hints at it, to the 29 other teams in the NHL, do you know the hugeness of that lawsuit?
I know.
Like, restraint of trade is a big deal.
Gary Bettman works in mysterious ways, my friend.
I don't even think he would have to.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I don't. But then again,
Mike Ribeiro get a 2-year contract from the Predators. I mean, the Predators are a halfway house at this point. Like, the Predators will take on Voinov and just be like, they'll just be like, oh, he's just our next problem guy on Celebrity Rehab. Like, that's all it'll be. Like, someone will take him on and portray it like he's a changed man, and this shocked him to life. And I looked into his eyes and I saw a good man. Like, someone will do that because he plays 25 minutes a night.
So essentially, you're waiting for a press release from Nashville saying they've hired Dr. Drew as an associate coach.
It's basically what Dave Poyle is. I mean, honestly. Like, if you could bring back Mike Ribeiro during all this stuff and know what the details are, I mean, listen, he brings him back because he knows the Ribeiros are going to throw enough money at the victim to shut her up and make this go away. He basically communicated that in his comments to the media. So that's if you want to make that bed, lie in it. And if you make that bed for Ribeiro, it wouldn't shock me to see you make that bed for Voinoff either, to be honest with you.
Oof. Wow. Well, we'll see. I still err on the side of decency. We'll see what happens.
Oh, that's true. No, you're right. Because the other thing Poyle keeps on saying is that it's a civil case and not a criminal case. So maybe that's the point of demarcation. We'll sign a guy accused of molesting his nanny for 2 years if it's a civil case. But if it's a criminal case, then obviously we can't dabble in that dark sorcery.
Yeah, I get so. You. No, I don't disagree. I know. And listen, the NHL has. Listen, even having said all this, I know the NHL has a long, track record of bringing people back into the game that have done some significantly questionable things of not potentially the highest order, but the highest order. So I get that.
All right. Spirited discussion, sir. All right. We'll talk next week at some point, I'm sure, right?
Yeah, I got to get my podcast equipment back. Hopefully I'm going to get my equipment back this weekend. It took a while to get back from Fort Lauderdale, so hopefully I won't be doing this on the phone anymore.
The thing that Merrick and I are noodling through, we're probably going to do a couple shows a week. I might take one and roll solo with it, and then we'll do a huge, big Mamma Jamma show together that's like longer than our typical shows, just to make sure that we get everything in, is what we'll probably do.
And goofy jokes and stories and what'd your kid do this week.
Oh, God, yeah. Well, that's another thing, too.
Summertime. Taking mine to the pool right now.
Yeah, all right. All right, well, enjoy your time at the Ool. Notice there's no pee in it. Let's keep it that way.
Come on, boys. Pee check before we go in. Let's go.
Talk to you next week, buddy.
All right, see you, Wish. See you, everybody.
Bye. Merrick versus Brzezinski goes for a half hour, and Rob Rossi will come on. I'll apologize to him because I think we were supposed to have him on 10 minutes ago. Who won Free Agent Frenzy Chaos of 99? Homer pick, but Ron Hextall for the entire offseason. Well, it's not a Homer pick, then. It's a Ron Hextall pick. It's a Philly joke. Smart trades, smart drafting, and not going crazy during free agency. Agreed. I think the Flyers have done really well for themselves, and Neuwirth is a nice little backup for Mason there too. Don MKB writes, in Washington with the Justin Williams signing to alleviate Game 7 woes in the TJ Oshie trade. Again, like I said, and also Phil Holcomb thinks that Brian McClellan also recognized the gaps in the roster and at least is trying to address them and improve. Yeah, I mean, two things on that as a guy who used to cover the Caps. First off, the risk in the Oshie trade is that Oshie doesn't work out as well as you want him to. You know what you get with him. You're hoping for more, but what you gave up isn't going to come back to haunt you. And then McClellan's, listen, man, I liked George McPhee. I really enjoyed talking to George McPhee. I think George McPhee is a really good guy, and I think he should be a GM in this league again. But McClellan has been so laser point specific in addressing the ills of this Capitals team. It kind of blows you away. And he also has shown that lack of loyalty that we were all a little bit worried he wouldn't exhibit, being that he worked under McPhee for so long. So he's been real good. He's been real good. Let's see who else here. Karen Douglas says that I say the word tourists wrong. I say tourists. That's very true. But I own up to it. I know I have certain speech impediments. Joining us now on the line, a man who does not have any speech impediments. He has a purebred, beautiful Pittsburgh accent, and I enjoy listening to him talk, as you will too. Rob Rossi of the Pittsburgh Tribune Reviewer, our good friend, joins us again. Spinning yarns, spinning tales, and talking about this amazing moment in Penguins history in which they acquire Phil Kessel from the Leafs. You had some voice time on TSN on July 1st where they played the audio clip of you losing your mind because the Leafs didn't get Derek Pouliot rather in the trade.
I was losing my mind? I mean, I think I lost it already.
On TSN radio, they played the radio clip of you talking about how it was inexcusable the Leafs didn't get Pouliot.
Yeah, I think it was inexcusable. I mean, I don't know. I don't understand how the Leafs did this deal without getting the best available prospect in the Penguins organization. And, you know, the idea that the Penguins weren't going to give up Derek Pouliot, given that how badly they wanted Phil Kessel, I don't agree that you don't do that. Now, if you value Kasperi Kapanen over Derek Pouliot, that's fine, but then you're wrong. So, hey, it's not like the Leafs haven't been wrong before. So,
what happened between the trade that was being discussed that was going to involve Pouliot and involve some veteran salary going back to Toronto? What happened between that and the deal that we ended up seeing with Kessel going to the Penguins?
I think the simplest way of putting it is Jim Rutherford has done this before, you know, and he I think he read the market really well. I think he understood coming into the draft second day on Saturday that there was not a great opportunity for Toronto to move Phil Kessel. And I think he also had a good sense that Toronto wanted to move Phil Kessel. So, you know, Chris Kunitz and Rob Scuderi both have clauses in their contracts that would prevent them from going to Toronto. So before you go to them, you want to be sure that that's going to be the deal. So I think he was able to swing this deal without giving up a whole lot off of his NHL roster. Now, that, Greg, is going to be a bit of an interesting thing going forward because, let's face it, this wasn't that good of an NHL roster last year in Pittsburgh. But, I think they're better now with Phil Kessel. They're deeper now with Phil Kessel. And, you know, I think Chris Kunitz might become a third-line player for the Penguins now. And I think as a third-line player, Chris Kunitz can be pretty effective for this team.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that because, you know, it's funny. Like, you see the Penguins address a need with the Kessel move, because I mean it was pretty clear after James Neal left that they needed a sniper, maybe to play with Gino, maybe to play with Sid, but they needed more goals, they needed more offense, more elite level offensive players on this team. But it seems like, you know, there's a notion of maybe taking your eye off the ball a little bit from some Penguins fans in the sense that you add Kessel, but the thought is the rest of this roster is so jacked up. You need to address at least two spots maybe on the blue line. The bottom six is still problematic. I mean, is it a case where this Kessel move is made, and that's great, but there's so much other heavy lifting to do that the Penguins are actually still in trouble?
Well, I think they are in trouble because I think the East got better. And I think at the very least this Kessel move gives them a chance to not lose too much ground. But they were an eighth seed last year. Now people say they had injuries, but I don't think one of the oldest rosters in the NHL is going to suddenly not have injury issues, and Penguins have had that be a problem for them for several years. Now, it wasn't like last year was the first time they woke up and missed a lot of man games. So, look, it's going to be a challenge for them. I think it's going to be really hard for them to make the playoffs. I mean, I think they can, but that's a really good division. It might be the best division in hockey. So I think you had to do something. So if you don't get Phil Kessel, your top six isn't very good, your bottom six isn't very good, and your back end's young. At least your top six is better now. And let's not forget, they had one very agitated superstar center and another one who was watching pretty closely. So both of those guys made it clear that they wanted an upgrade. They wanted somebody else to come in and be able to carry some of the load. And when that happens, you have to do it. Because the last thing the Penguins needed was Evgeny Malkin walking into them on, you know, the first day of training camp and saying what he could have said, which is, you didn't get me anybody to play with. I don't want to be here anymore. So now they get now they get another year of Malkin buying in, which is good for them because they're trying to sell.
How much do you think that plays into it? I mean, you were somebody who had reported some unhappiness, I think, amongst the star players and all that stuff. I mean, does the fact that this move was made first, I mean, even before they addressed the blue line really and addressed the bottom six, this was their first big prominent move, basically, of the offseason. Is that signal to us that this is how dire things were behind the scenes with Sid and Gino?
I don't think they were dire, but they were under a lot of pressure. I mean, those guys hold the keys, right? And look, Malkin was frustrated. People can choose to believe me or not, but I can tell you, there's two people in Pittsburgh that have really good relationships with Evgeny Malkin, and I'm one of them. The other one's a player. So, it's it's just a fact of life. Now, he's still paying attention, but he's happy because they're a better team up front, and that's what he wanted right now. And that's what Sydney wanted, too. I don't think Sydney's quite as interested in that being out there, but look, this was a significant move because of that, but I don't think they made this move because of that. I think they made this move because Jim Rutherford realized that this team needed to be able to be something. And at least now they're a team that has a decent top six and might be able to score some goals.
Right.
And you can try to work on the other things.
Do you see either Kunitz or Dupuy moving based on salary?
It's going to be tough, right? I mean, it's going to be tough to move those things. I mean, Pascal's got to come back and show he can play. But I think we're probably looking at something where Chris Kunitz and Pascal Dupuy become part of a third line in Pittsburgh that might be pretty good. Those were guys that were 2 years ago part of the best top line in hockey, you know, those two and Crosby. So I think Pittsburgh's top nine now is comparable to a lot of teams. It's the fourth line in the back end that you got to worry about. And again, if they can move somebody to improve that, I think they will. But they don't have a lot of cap space, Greg, and they don't have a lot of guys in the system. The guys that they have in the system are going to play. So, you know, they had to make fixes somewhere. I give Jim Rutherford a lot of credit. He didn't have a lot of guns to fire here. He brought a shoe to a gunfight, as I told you the other day. And, you know, he came out of here with the guy that he wanted. So, I mean, that's pretty impressive managing by that guy.
So was there any truth then to the statements that Peter Karmanos Jr. made about the Penguins in the sense that they've mortgaged their future for Kessel and it was foolhardy?
Well, the Penguins mortgaged their future a long time ago. and that wasn't Jim Rutherford.
Yeah.
And I don't blame them for that, by the way. I don't blame them. You've Crosby and Malkin. You try to win when you have them when they're young. You know, I put that a lot on the guys that are Crosby and Malkin. You know, some of it was injury. A lot of it was injury. This team was really, really decimated by injuries. The Crosby injury wiped out two of the best teams Chiro ever built, 2010-11 and 2011-12. I mean, it just wiped them out. Crosby missed the end of that season, as did Malkin, and he missed most of the next season. And then when he came back, it kind of went sideways. So injuries definitely interrupted what we thought might be a big run here by Pittsburgh. But look, their future isn't. I mean, no, why would anybody in Pittsburgh care about 3 years from now? You know, they're going to get two cracks at this thing now, and they're going to get two cracks to try to take this back to where it was, which was a team that was contending for at least a conference final every year. And, you know, you got to hope at some point, if you're the Penguins, you get your big four, I guess a big five now in Kessel. Added to that, you get them healthy going into the postseason, because if they're not, it really doesn't matter.
Right. A couple more things real quick. Brandon Saad just signed 6 years, $6 million per, according to Elliott Friedman, with the Columbus Blue Jackets. How close were we to maybe seeing an offer sheet from the Penguins on Saad, or was that simply going to be a trade option for Rutherford?
They never made an offer to Columbus. And I don't get the sense that Jim Rutherford was really interested.
To Columbus or to Chicago?
To Chicago, I'm sorry. They never sorry, I apologize. Pittsburgh never made an offer to Chicago to get Saad before July 1st, and I've not been under the impression that Jim Rutherford had any interest in Brandon Saad, not because I don't think he likes him as a player, but just because, look, that was a player that was going to be a tougher get for them. I mean, the thing you got to remember about Kessel is they're getting him for about $2 million less than they would have.
Right.
And I think the thing they like about Kessel, talking to their coach, Mike Johnson, and I'm guessing Jim Rutherford about this too, is that he has shown he's a guy that has speed, can also get his own shot. Where I get the sense that from at least the Penguins coaches, the concern about Saad was he hasn't really proven that if he doesn't play with a great center, that he can get his own shot yet. Now you would say, well, he's going to play in Pittsburgh, he'll have great centers, but those great centers aren't always healthy. Phil Kessel, if Crosby and Malkin aren't healthy, can still give you production in the second line if he's not playing with one of those centers. I think we have yet to see if Brandon Saad can do that.
Right, exactly. And I guess finally, big picture on Jimmy Rutherford, who I think is much like Don Sweeney, as I said to Merrick earlier in the show, really kind of turned around the old reputation in a couple of days. Do you get that vibe from fans? Do you get the vibe that Jimmy Rutherford is no longer
befuddling? The vibe from the fans here doesn't interest me. It never has. You know, I always say about fans, it's great that they're fans, but the truth is they're paid to be fans, or they pay to be fans, and I'm paid not to be one. So,
sorry. I misjudge how much you hate people, and I hate when I do that. I'm so sorry.
Well, yeah, but that's okay. I mean, you'll figure it out, or I'll just stop talking to you. No, look, I think the people in Pittsburgh are pretty forgiving, and I think Jim Rutherford – and look, I'm going to make this clear, too. I think you got to remember what happened to Jim Rutherford last year. He was in one place for pretty much his entire management life, and then he comes to Pittsburgh, and he comes basically in the beginning of the third round. He had no time. He had no time to evaluate that organization. He inherits a bunch of assistants that were from the previous general manager, and he's got people above him screaming in his ear, do stuff, do stuff, do stuff. And he got off to a rocky start, and then some of the things that he did, the best laid plans went to waste because the season was just an embarrassment of tragedy for Pittsburgh. I mean, we don't even talk about the fact that they couldn't at one point get guys on the ice because they just had mumps breaking out everywhere. So, look, it was a tough, tough year. I think what you saw this year from Jim Rutherford is he had a plan because he was able to put one together. I think he took a deep breath after the playoffs. I give him a lot of credit for this, Greg. He swallowed hard and digested his own mistakes. You know, he came out and owned those mistakes after the postseason, and then now he's gone about starting to fix them. That's the sign of a smart general manager. And the Penguins right now have a guy that looks like the guy they thought they were getting last year, and I give him high marks for that. Because the easy thing to do would be to double down on a lot of things he had done, and he hasn't been willing to do that.
Right. Rob, you're a gentleman and a scholar, and thanks for all your great work in the last week or two on all this Penguin stuff. And have a fun summer, man. Like, you're going to be a little bit more busier than a lot of people, I think.
Probably, and I'm sure that my Twitter feed is now blowing up after what I said about the people. So if I can just leave the people with this, I don't care. I don't look at you anyway. So,
Rob Rossi, ladies and gentlemen, we will talk to you soon, my friend. Take care.
Take care, guys.
Rob Rossi, he's a man of the people. A man of the people. John Vogel earlier this morning reported that Ryan O'Reilly had signed a contract or had agreed to a contract, and now it's official that he signs a 7-year deal with the Buffalo Sabres. 7 years for O'Reilly and the Sabres. No AAV as of yet, but I'm sure we'll find out in due time. That's great, man. You know, O'Reilly and Eichel and who, Gergensen's, I guess, the other guy, up the gut in perpetuity. Doing okay for yourselves up there. You're doing okay. What about Reinhardt? Him too? Reinhardt too? Sam says. Reinhardt, all of them. A Buffalo Cup within 3 years, I would say. About 3 years. Right? Give or take a few? 3 years? Why don't teams send out terms? That's such a pain in the ass. Is it the same Gary Bettman principle of, you know, nobody cares about salary figures? Is that what it is? I don't know. Sammy, game show Friday time, I think, right? Because I think it's about to happen. Okay, so our victim is going to be on in a moment. Our victim today, by the way, James Minger, he says he's always wanted to be on Game Show Friday, and due to how awesome The Birth of America is, he has the opportunity as his office is closed today. Again, like, I don't understand why you wouldn't just take advantage of your office being closed and do what I'm going to do as soon as this microphone goes cold, which is run around naked and just put my butt on things for like an hour. I mean, I guess there are security cameras here at Yahoo. I mean, in theory, I guess that video could probably be used to terminate my contract. I guess it'll probably end up online at some point on Gawker. But, like, still, think about it. Think about the thrill of it all. Be able to run free as God intended through your office. Right? Anyways. O'Reilly deal. I don't know AAV yet for O'Reilly. Oh, well. It'll come out. And wow, what's that? That's a goodbye music. Saad, by the way, six years, $36 million. Sure.
I mean, game show Friday.
Joining us down the line is James. How do you say your last name, bud?
It's Minger, so it's like finger with an M.
It is Minger. I didn't know if it was Minger or Minger. What is the entomology on Minger?
It's actually German Italian, but I myself am Korean because I'm adopted.
Oh, interesting. So
it's
all right.
Really confusing for a lot of people.
All right, James. Where are you from, by the way?
Philadelphia. We actually met very briefly at the draft party last year.
Well, I appreciate you saying very briefly to get me off the hook of having to remember you.
was
I drunk at that point, or was it before that?
You know, I'm not sure. It was still pretty early on because I was pretty lame and had to leave. So
let me ask you another question. Did my Jersey accent sound prominent, or did it not? That also is the canary in the coal mine as far as my alcoholism.
You know, I've lived in this area my whole life, so unless you're like from like North Jersey or from like the shore, I really don't hear it as much.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It's like when people, when I go to other places, they say, oh, you kind of have a Philly accent. Not really, no, not at all, but I don't know. You get kind of deaf to it.
You do. You do. And by the way, by the Jersey Shore, of course, you mean central New Jersey. South Jersey, much like Philly, has that sort of like quasi cocktail of New Jersey accent and Baltimore accent that is the Philadelphia accent. So
that's right.
Yeah, next. Welcome to WIP. Hey, what's up? I want to talk about the Eagles. Do you think Donovan's got a good season in him or not? I'll hang up and listen. That's kind of the thing.
Hey there,
that's
my only.
Hey, yeah, Howard, how's it going? And then yeah. Ask, and then when Eskin hears the question, all you hear, someone says, I'll hang up and listen. And then they hang up, and all Eskin goes, he just breathes heavily in a microphone because he's sad that the stupid question was asked.
Oh, the best is
Philadelphia
actually,
Sports Talk Radio moments for everybody, by the way. That's good stuff.
Last bit about that is Spike Eskin. He's a really fun Twitter because he just constantly gets apologizing for his dad.
Well, Howard tries to also break news, right? Didn't he also try to break news a bunch of times, too, and it didn't really work out? I don't know.
He's kind of like LeBron. He's just like got everything secondhand. Like, he's never the first guy, but like he'll confirm the confirmation.
All right, James, listen. It's Game Show Friday. It's a July 3rd edition. I'm so happy that you could listen live and come on the show today. You've provided some categories for me. As you know, it is a five-round game, three choices each round. You have to get three rounds correct, and then you win a fabulous prize of producer Sam's choosing. Are you ready to play Game Show Friday?
I am.
Okay. Your categories in round one, sir, are The Simpsons, which was a category you suggested, July 4, and the 2006 National Hockey League Draft. Which one would you like?
Gotta go Simpsons.
Well, you knew that we would have to go with a hockey question, being that it is a hockey podcast. What was the name of the bloody hockey-centric video game that Bart and Milhouse played in the episode The Regina Monologues?
I actually don't know this one.
Ooh.
Regina Monologues.
Mm-hmm. Hockey video game that Bart and Milhouse played in that episode.
This is a newer seasoned one, is it not?
No, it's definitely one that I think I saw, which means it might have been anywhere from season 1 to season like 13 or 14.
I know it's not the answer, but I'm going to... Because the only thing that comes to mind in video games is Lee Corbello's Potting Challenge, Bone Storm.
Both of those are amazing pulls, but the answer we were looking for was Hockey Dad. Hockey Dad was the video game, and you could find it on YouTube. It's a game in which two hockey dads beat the ever-loving hell out of each other at center ice, and one is actually, I think, killed in the fight.
And then he like cried.
Hockey Dad. Right. Hockey Dad is the one we were looking for. 0-1, but that's okay. You've got many more to come. Round two. 1990s goaltenders, which was the question that you suggested, NHL shootouts, and the free agent frenzy. Which one would you like, sir?
I'm going to go frenzy.
All right. Free agent frenzy. Rank these players by the size of their 2015-16 cap hits from the largest to the smallest. So highest cap hit to lowest cap hit for these three guys who signed contracts in the last week. The players are Devin Dubnyk, Mike Green, Dougie Hamilton. Who has the largest cap hit all the way down to the smallest?
Oh, Hamilton's at the bottom. I'm going to say Dubnyk, Green, Hamilton.
Incorrect, sir. Green, $6 million. Hamilton, $5.75 million. Dubnyk, only $4.33 million. Again,
oh, I was way off.
Yeah, all right. Now the pressure's on, though, because now you need a sweep. And I think you can do it. Your categories in round three are hockey gear, NHL stat leaders, and NHL announcers.
I'm going to go with gear as I selected that, and I'm very curious as to what kind of question you're going to have without Merrick.
It's going to be about sneakers and a ball. What was the name of the uniform system that the National Hockey League introduced after the 2005 lockout, a uniform system that promised to absorb 76% less moisture than previous jerseys did?
The Reebok Edge system.
That is correct. All right. You see, I know hockey gear questions.
That was
maybe.
Very specific. Yeah.
If they involve very specific things. All right.
It's like a poker question, but like that, I was kind of curious.
All right. There you go. All right. So there you go. That is you got round three. So now we're 1 and 2, and obviously still in need of a sweep. The next round, your categories are July 4, the ever-popular Celebrating a Birthday Tomorrow, and 1990s goaltenders. Which one would you like?
I got to stay alive, so I'm going to pick my category of 90s goalies.
All right, here we go. It's a tough one, I'll be honest with you. Mm. You sound like a hockey fan, so we're not going to F around with you. We're going to give you the real one. Okay, if you could pull Mizzotti, then you might have a chance at this.
Right.
1996 was the year. Jim Carrey won the Vezina Trophy for the Washington Capitals. Name the other two finalists for the award. Now, here's a hint. Well, hold on. Let me ask you. Can you do it anyway? Do you need a hint for that? Other two finalists in 96 with Jim Carrey?
The one that's circling my head is Hattrick.
Let me give you the hint then.
Okay.
Because I'll just give you the hint now. One was a goalie for the Detroit Red Wings and one was a goalie for the Tampa Bay Lightning.
Oh, Pupa and Mike Brennan.
No, it was not. It was Chris Osgood.
Oh, God. Really? Because that's when 96 was the Vernon.
I shit you not. It was Chris Osgood. I will double check for you right now. Vamp for me for a second, because I'm almost positive that I am correct on this one. Let me see here. Vezina Trophy.
Right,
you got Pupa right. That was correct. Vezina Trophy winners. Now you're having me. Your reaction to that being wrong was so distinct that it made me want to check. Yep, there you go. Number one of the voting was Jim Carrey. Number two was Chris Osgood, 46 votes, 5 first place votes, then Darren Pupa, then Brodeur, Hextall, Fuhr, Van Beesbrouck, Hasek, Waugh, Hebert, Ranford. Chris Osgood, Darren Pupa.
Oh, yeah, I thought Vernon, because wasn't that his turn to be the playoff goalie that year?
Was it his year that he was going to be the playoff goalie? Because he played against the Devils in 95.
Yeah.
And then lost. And then Osgood, Vernon. Vernon played 32 games that year in the regular season. Osgood played 50. And Osgood was 39-6-5 that year. 217 goals against, 9-11 too soon, save percentage. In the playoffs, Ozzie played 15. Vernon only played 4. So that was actually the passing of the torch here to Osgood.
But then 97, he beat my Flyers. But I blame the Hockey Writers Association. 50 games and an investment trophy. Are you kidding me?
Listen, I don't know what to tell you. I never vote for the Vezina. I can't.
Oh, that's right. That's a general manager.
It's a general manager award. Yeah. So,
my apologies.
Right. So it's not my fault that they put Chris Osgood in the top 3 for the Vezina. But since he was there, obviously it bolsters his Hall of Fame case, I think, right?
Obviously. So it says Corey Crawford.
Celebrating a birthday tomorrow, by the way, this Detroit native was a garbage-collecting forward who scored 278 goals in 1,068 games for the Red Wings, Rangers, Bruins, Flyers, and Capitals.
Mikey Knoebel.
Boy, don't you feel terrible. July 4. How many Hall of Famers have worn number 4 in their careers? So how many Hall of Fame players have worn number 4 in their careers? A, 12, B, 14, C, 16, D, 18.
I'm going to go with the median of 14.
That's also correct. That includes Ronnie Francis, who wore number 4 for 1 year, 1982, with the Hartford Whalers. So basically, if you had chosen either of the categories that weren't yours, you'd still be playing right now.
Self-deprecation is a way of life, you know.
Do you have anything you'd like to plug, or anybody you want to say hi to in the remaining minutes of you on the air right now?
Oh, sure, yeah. You can find me on Twitter at HockeyPanda. Again, Asian guy playing hockey, right? I write a really crappy Flyers blog at flyers-philia.blogspot.com. So once a month I'll write something there. I'll give a shout out to the Edgemere Youth Hockey Foundation, which I'm a part of and coach the 16 midget team there.
What's the name of the foundation?
The Edgemere Youth Hockey Foundation.
Oh, that's right. The one that was prominently featured on 24/7.
And in fact, you could actually see me skating in the background as I was refereeing one of the games there.
There you go.
Yeah, great program where gives a lot of kids a chance to play that probably couldn't win otherwise.
As an Asian American, what did you think of Andong Song getting drafted by the Islanders?
I thought it was tremendous, absolutely tremendous. I mean, like, it's kind of interesting though, because I actually grew up in right across the river from Lawrenceville, where he played prep school. Mm-hmm. That's a great program in itself, but just the opportunity is just amazing. I think I tweeted out that Peter Ng, Richard Park, and I are welcoming it to NHL this side.
Awesome. Very good. All right, sir. Thank you for your time. I think I just saw that Ryan O'Reilly is getting paid. Is he getting paid $7.5 million per season on the cap? Hang on.
Wow.
That's $7.5 for O'Reilly?
So in year 5, they'll trade him or try to put drugs on him or something?
Elliot says that his salary is $1 million per year and the rest is in signing bonus.
What?
And for a total of $7.5 million. I have no idea why.
That sounds circumventing as hell.
Well, no. I mean, the signing bonus all counts against the cap, so it's still 7.5 right. against the cap. But his base salary is $1 million, and the rest is a signing bonus that's listed out for the next 7 years. That's really bizarre.
Very curious to see how that works. I've never heard of anything like that.
Well, I mean, it's good to know that Ryan O'Reilly has kept up his grand tradition of having bizarre-ass contracts put on him. That's weird.
If that's your brand and your lot in life, stick with it. It's clearly working for him.
Yeah. Whatever. Who knows? 7.5 for O'Reilly. I wonder how that affects nothing, because no one's had an offer sheet put on that early in life. And what the hell is Stamkos going to get? Stamkos is going to get, like, the gross national product of some small South American country to play in this league if he gets 7.5. I don't know. All right. James, you still there?
Yeah, I am. That's a very good thought, though. But
all right, bud. Maybe.
But no, this is great. I always wanted to do it. And, America being so great, I get the day off before the 4th of July. So
Woo.
It's a lot of fun.
Awesome. Take care, man. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right. You have a good one.
All right, bye. Wow. That's a pretty interesting contract right there. 7.5 million. Well, I mean, listen, Terry's got money. The Bruins have space. They gave up a lot to get him. He obviously is going to be second line center behind Eichel for in perpetuity. Man, crazy time. Crazy town. Anyways, that's the show. Back next week for more fun and excitement. And we shall speak to you then. Thanks to Sam for working today. Thanks to Merrick for hopping on. And we'll talk to you next week. And thanks to Rossi and thanks to James. All right, everybody. Bye. Thank you.